60,000-watt News Radio 1180 WHAM proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show at 222-1180, star 1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers, or the One Communications line at 1-800-295-1180. Now alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on 50,000-watt 1180 WHAM.
Martindale. Well, good morning, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the gyps in the PC. It is Sunday, the 25th of February, Anno Domini 2007, and you lucky people, you're listening to The Match Game. No, this is
Price is Right.
Bob Barker, I knew that. This is Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 8 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, stuff you can use, all kinds of interesting and important things about computers. First of all, I would like to...
Oh, I got a trivia question.
Oh, here we go.
For everybody. All right. In 1938, what item does literally now every person in the U.S. have? There you go.
In 1938?
It came out in 1938, and now every person has one in the U.S.
Every person in the U.S.
Yep.
Social Security number.
Nope.
That right. Wasn't bad.
No, that's true, though.
TV?
No. Radio?
We'll put it out to our listeners, too.
Let them run. In the meantime.
An item in 1938 came out, and now everybody in the U.S. has one.
Just one or one or more?
Yeah.
Yeah. If you're buying prescription drugs over the internet to save a little money, here's... Here's
Segway ban.
No, this is the news. Authorities are warning that some consumers who thought they were buying sleep aids, antidepressants, and other drugs over the internet were getting other drugs instead. Authorities said they may have gotten a powerful antipsychotic drug in its place. Oh, I hope all our Soundbites listeners got
drugs.
Some. The Food and Drug Administration says several consumers who took the drugs ended up having to seek emergency medical treatment for symptoms like difficult breathing, muscle spasms, and muscle stiffness. The FDA's site has examples of the bogus drugs and packaging to help consumers decide whether they have the right medicine in their possession. So if you're one of the many millions of people who are buying their drugs over the internet, be very careful and make sure you are indeed getting the drugs you think you're getting. And Steve will put up that... link in just a minute or two. It's that's a pretty serious thing.
Don't buy drugs over the internet, or at least buy from a reputable pharmacy, not some email you got for cheap drugs.
Well, that's right, and it ends in .ru or one of those things. So you want to be a little more careful of that, because
the original worry was that they were just fake and placebos. This is interesting that they're the wrong drugs.
Right. Right, they're drugs. They're just not the drugs people thought they were.
Well, listen, one of the local TV stations, I forget which one, did do that. They bought some drugs over the internet, and it turned out a number of them were just sugar pills.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's such an easy thing.
I guess there's still a manufacturing cost involved in making fake drugs. So
Yeah. Just
steal drugs and just sell it to whoever you want.
Sure.
Yeah, you color stamp them and.
I ordered Viagra, but they look a lot like sweet tarts. I don't know what that was about.
Listen, we've got a couple of calls about your trivia question. Nice going.
Thank you.
Yes.
Excellent.
What was your question again? I didn't hear it.
All right. In 1938, an item came out, and now everybody in the U.S. has one.
You didn't give the answer yet?
No.
Oh. Suddenly this is going to turn into the Bob Matthews Show.
Thank you.
Yes.
Is that good or bad?
It's good.
That is good.
Well, it's bad for Rob, because now he's going to answer more phone calls.
That's not going to answer more phone calls.
Let's take a trivia question. How about let's start with Larry from Ontario?
Hello.
Hi, Larry. What's the answer to the trivia?
Well, right away it just hit me. Calculator.
Nope. Thank you for playing.
All right.
Try Bill.
Bill from Rochester, New York.
Yes.
Bill.
A credit card.
Nope. Thank you for playing.
Oh, that was a nice choice, too. We'll get there. It's interesting. This is
It came out in 1938, and now everybody in the U.S. has one.
Yeah, but see, now I can't guess anymore because we're leaving it up to other people.
Well, if it goes out, I'll give another hint later.
Wikipedia and Google are getting a heck of a workout right now.
Hey, it's all contributing to this?
These are the people who can't live without their, there we go. He's got the sounds there now. We're good.
I'm testing the bell just to make sure it works. 1938 that everyone uses now.
Yep. The bow tie.
They say Botox.
The Botox. Yeah.
You already had your
Alcoholics. You Alcoholics Anonymous.
You guys already had your guess for this hour.
All right, we'll go and take a real phone call. We have Patty from Webster on the line. Welcome, Patty. What's your question?
Patty.
Hello, Patty.
Patty, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
There you are, Patty. Thank you for coming. What's your question?
Oh, I have a question about SpyBot.
Yeah.
I have it, and thanks to Dave Enright, when he fixed my computer and upgraded it, he gave me directions on how to work it.
Yeah.
thank God I never knew I was doing it wrong. But last week I tried to click on updates.
Mm-hmm.
In the beginning, and I waited and I waited, and I left my computer, and the next day I came back, and I was still waiting. I was wondering, is there a problem with SpyBot?
Yes, there was from a couple sites. Now, here's the thing. When you're running SpyBot, it randomly picks one of, I think it's 7 or 8 sites. Now, as it's downloading, because you can watch this happen, and it should happen right away if you've got, you know, like DSL or Frontier DSL or Roadrunner.
Even on dial-up, it should start right away.
Yeah. Well, it's a little bit slower. It might take 5 minutes as opposed to instantly. But you'll see it starting to download some of the updates. If you see it, bad checksum error message.
Or not start downloading at all.
Yeah. That particular site could be down. What you can do is cancel out of it, the download part. And where that site says it's downloading it from, you can change it and select one of the other sites.
Yeah, there's a little, it's a button that doesn't look like a menu up next to the check for updates button that says where you're updating it from. And you can pick a different server from that list and
update it from
different
places.
And last
week there was a couple of sites that were having issues. I usually go to, I think it's called Safe Networking No. 1. I always select that and it's usually always up and it works fantastic. So try that.
Oh, I'm going to, because you know what happened is I couldn't even close down my SpyBot, so I had to shut the computer off, start it back up just to shut it down.
Yeah, I got hung up in trying to keep getting in contact with that server. So try that. Oh. Before you even start the downloads, click on that button. You'll see that it'll drop down, and you should be all set.
All right. I just want to mention that the chat room is up. I kind of forgot to start it. But it is up. Eagle Wolf is in there already. We're going to be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton. More people who want to answer the trivia question and me, Nick Francesco. When we come back, we'll also talk about updates to Mozilla. It is 15 minutes after the hour. You're listening to Sound Bites on 1180 WHAM.
Call Wham.
You're just finding them all
Woo-hoo!
Today, aren't you? Welcome
Good
to
one.
Every now and then I feel a little saucy and I start digging into the archives here and see what I can find.
I liked you better last week when you were just in a porky mood and just played whatever.
Well, for anybody in Rochester, you know how folks will sit here and say there's nothing to do?
Yeah.
Last night I happened to go to the downstairs cabaret and saw a show.
How is that?
That is fantastic. It's all 60s.
Oh.
And it's by five girls do it. And it is one fantastic show, like a 90-minute show. But boy, that 90 minutes went by so fast.
Yeah, I wanted to go in my capacity as the Wham Entertainment reporter, but I couldn't, unfortunately. I had work. I had school.
That don't remember the 60s. Go to that, and you might remember some of the tunes.
I wasn't alive in the 60s.
Well, you'd still enjoy doing DJ.
No, you know, I do.
We're allowed to say bite me on the air.
Well, we'll soon find out.
I guess so. It was just a legitimate question, I thought. Listen, welcome back. This is Sound Bites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
It is 20 minutes after the hour, and you've already been listening to Sound Bites. We're still waiting for people. Oh, we have Mary from Rochester to answer the trivia question. Wait a minute, Mary. For those who just tuned in, Dave will repeat the trivia question.
An item was invented in 1938, and now everybody in the U.S. has it. What is it, Mary? Mary?
Television.
No, thank you very much.
No!
Now, for extra bonus points that don't count, who invented television?
No, she's good.
Nope. Well, no.
I know that. Said,
yeah.
But I'm not going to say
it. Go ahead and say it, Philo.
No, I'm not. No.
Yeah.
No, let other people answer it.
Well, not a question.
We can have two questions a day.
We could. We could have two. We're still got to get the one question, yeah. but we'll... Before we go back,
I saw him on What's My Line, one of those old commercial or no, game show clip shows.
Was
showing it. No one knew who he was. No one could get it in the whole the whole show, and they just all gave up at the end.
How sad is that? I know. And who
invented television? He invented the thing you're doing right now.
Right. Who's the first? Here's another trivia question. Who was the first person image, whatever you want to call it, broadcast over television?
That's the first image people from space will see of our planet.
That's exactly right.
Yep. But that was 1939.
Right. Back to back to the news before we go back to the phones. Mozilla has released updates for its Firefox browser and Thunderbird email client for Windows, Mac, and Linux users. These are security fixes, and Mozilla strongly recommends that all Firefox users upgrade to these latest releases immediately. This update resolves the location.hostname vulnerability and other security and stability issues. That location.hostname vulnerability was the Firefox cookie flaw that was recently discovered by a guy named Michael Zalewski, who's an ethical hacker from Poland. He said that the flaw could allow hackers to set or change cookies, permissions for website settings and passwords for their own purposes. A fix was actually made by the developers last week for Firefox. This update includes a patch for that fix, as well as a fix for the critical level flaw involving memory corruption that can lead to crashes. That flaw left people using JavaScript in their email, which, by the way, is strongly discouraged by everybody. Don't let your email do JavaScript. It's a very bad idea. The update is available in 37 languages from getfirefox.com and getthunderbird.com for just about every version. And you can also get it, of course, by going to the Firefox help menu and clicking check for updates. You should do that immediately. It's important. Get it done now. All right. Our next caller is Jim from Greece. Welcome, Jim. What's your question?
First of all, I'd like to take a shot at the trivia.
Oh, go for it.
Remote control.
No, thank you for playing.
Oh, nice one. What's your question?
Okay, question is, traveling in business, I'd like to replace the heavy laptop with the smallest, lightest, most compact laptop that would basically still do everything I need to do, which is Microsoft Office and email and so on and so forth. And I was wondering what recommendations you guys might have.
It depends on how heavy a user you're going to be. Because you can get very tiny ones like the OQO, which are ridiculously small, but they're very hard to
type on.
Some of the Sony Vaios are really tiny, too, but they accomplish that by taking out the optical drive, taking out the extra ports, and so you have to dock it in order to plug into a bigger monitor to run an optical drive, or you have to carry all that stuff with you, too, so the fact that the computer's smaller doesn't really matter.
Right.
Need to be able to type easily, be able to edit documents customer sites and things like that.
Sony makes a Vaio that's a 12-inch screen, so you can tell how proportionately small the keyboard would be. You could probably go down and see one of those at one of your local superstores, and that would give you an idea of how easy it is for you specifically to type on. In addition, of course, a lot of the laptops nowadays, it depends on what you mean by, how small and light it needs to be. Light, you can get down to 3 pounds, but they're not necessarily small.
One of the other ones that I would suggest, it might be a little bit more weight, but one of the Toughbooks, only from the standpoint that you take the screen, you can swivel it around and put it down flat, and you can use the tablet.
Well, here's a cute one, the Sony Vaio UX. It's a 9-inch screen, and then the whole screen slides up to show you the QWERTY keyboard underneath it. Yeah. So it doesn't flip open like a traditional laptop.
Sort of
it
like
slides open like a cell phone.
Okay.
But like the Toughbooks, you can switch those around, and then you're only working with the surface area of the original notebook size.
Right.
So you don't have the screen flipping up, and you can just set it flat on your desk, or if you're in the truck working away, you can sit there and write with it. It's got wireless and everything else.
What's that Sony number?
The UX.
Okay. I'll look into that. Thank you, gentlemen.
All right. Good luck. That's an interesting question. A lot of people want to go bigger and faster and wider screens so they can do movies and yada, yada, yada. But But Jim is looking to go smaller and lighter.
To go small and light, it's, you know, for the road warrior who's got so much stuff to carry anyway. You know, even a pound or two for a laptop extra can really kill your shoulders.
Right.
Oh, I guessed wrong. This is a 4.5-inch screen on the Sony Vaio UX. I'm trying to find the weight on it, but it's very tiny. It's almost a handheld. It's about twice the size of the Palm or a Motorola Q smartphones, and it is a full function computer.
Wow, I'm looking at it right now. It's Sony.com. The Sony UX looks like a pretty neat little machine. See, this is the kind of machine that a lot of people really like because, you know, when you go to a meeting or whatever, it used to be you'd bring a notebook, a smallish sort of notebook. Mm-hmm. And that would make you happy, and you'd write, and you'd be done. Now people are lugging these gigantic laptops with them, and they're just clumsy. People take up more room, and you can't see over the screen to the other people.
You're
sitting
there in you're trying to look over screens and everything else.
And a notebook and a sheet of paper or a pencil just looks so antiquated.
Right. But this is a little, they call it a pint-sized powerhouse, this UX series, and it actually runs Vista Business. It's got a touch screen. It doesn't seem to say it's doing tablet stuff, but it's certainly got, holy cow, it's a hefty, no wonder it's $2,500. It's a 4.5-inch
Well, yeah, smaller they get, the more cost.
Yeah, well, exactly. You're never going to get the little ones for cheap because they're much more weight, but it's got a gig of RAM. It's got 32 gig of flash memory. It doesn't really have a hard drive, but it's got 32 gig of flash.
Yeah, we've been speculating about that for a while. The flash memory now at 32 gigs, you put one or two of them in there, take out the moving hard drive, and really increase your battery life.
Yeah, exactly.
But at a higher cost.
Well, that's right. But businesses could buy these, even if, you know, humans don't buy them themselves. All right, we're going to take a quick break. The mighty Glenn Lamberts will be in to give you news and sports and weather and all the important things that we all listen to Wham for. And when we come back on the other side of that, we've got Dave Enright, Steve Ray, the incredible Rob Linton, who's desperately digging through the library to see what interesting stuff. We've got the trivia question, what was invented in 1938 that we all have one of now. I'm Nick Francesco. It's 28 minutes after the hour. You're listening to Sound Bites on 1180 WHAM. Back on the other side of the news with more cool stuff.
Darling, why do...
If there's one thing I know, it's doing things big. That's why you can hear me, Donald Trump, on Rochester's biggest radio station. Weeknights at 6:10 on 50,000 watt, 1180 WHAM.
That may be the funniest thing I have ever seen in my entire life. The three sound
mics. I'm not going to turn their mics on. I'm just going to watch them dance.
We're just chair dancing.
Name this artist.
No.
Yes.
Queen. Welcome back to Sound Bites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton. You just didn't want to because you didn't know.
You're not
groovy enough.
I'm not groovy enough.
Freddie Mercury.
Then you got to get Weird Al's version of it.
33 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Sound
Bites. Another one rides the bus.
Yeah. All right. Speaking of flaws, we did the Mozilla flaw. Now we'll do the requisite Microsoft flaw. Researchers have discovered a highly critical security flaw in newly released Office 2007, despite Microsoft's efforts to deliver its most secure version yet of the productivity software. The consumer version of Office 2007, which launched only 4 weeks ago, is designed to withstand higher scrutiny by malicious code writers, as Microsoft subjected the software to code auditors as part of its security development lifecycle. But researchers at EI Digital Security found a file format vulnerability in Microsoft Office Publisher 2007, which could be exploited to let an outsider run code on a compromised PC. We were surprised that we could find a flaw so quickly, and one that was part of their core product, said Ross Brown, EI's chief executive. An attacker could create a malicious publisher file. Once the recipient opens the file, he or she could find the system infected and susceptible to a remote attack. Attack. Researchers at EI used a standard process of code auditing and discovering the vulnerabilities, Brown added. He noted that Microsoft either did not do a good job in its code auditing, or it may not have had enough people working on such a task. Microsoft, meanwhile, said it is investigating EI's report of a possible vulnerability in Publisher 2007 and will provide users with additional guidance if necessary. Let's, so once again, do not open files you don't know were specifically sent to you by someone you trust.
And it's kind of ironic because just on the heels of that, then, well, for the price that you pay for that, I mean, I'm looking at an ad right now, just to upgrade to Microsoft Office Standard or the full version. No, I take that back. Small business upgrade is $280.
Yeah,
and of course we're not recommending on upgrading because then that kills your XP license, right?
No. This is just for Office. Oh. And what I was getting at is on the heels of this, you know, in this exploit, Google just announced that for $50 you can get into their package of you know, Office products comparable that work just the same, just like OpenOffice.
OpenOffice completely free.
Yeah, and I mean, there's, you know, other alternatives, and, well, it's you constantly send me the stuff in OpenOffice.
Right. And I save it as an RTF, and you can open it.
You don't need to know what it was created in, you know, and it works fine.
Right. All right, we have another trivia person. Dave, a trivia question, if you don't mind.
Okay, in 1938, this item was made, and now everybody in the U.S. has it. What is it?
And we have Jerry from Chi-Li, New York, who wants to give us the answer to the trivia question. Jerry?
Good morning, man.
Good morning.
I actually know the answer. I actually guessed it before I verified it on Google.
Oh, this is Jerry.
This is our Jerry.
Well, I know Jerry knows everything.
Jerry knows everything.
Yeah. So I don't even think this is fair, but go ahead, Jerry.
Wait a minute. You didn't email me back. I've been trying to get a hold of you.
I don't know. You'll have to call me because I don't know anything about email.
Oh.
You probably got lost in a burst of spam.
Yeah, probably. So what's the answer, Jerry?
Well, a nice gentleman in Hungary named Laszlo Bier invented the ballpoint pen.
Thank you for playing, but no.
Dave, several people have guessed that, and Dave keeps saying no.
I'll give you a further. All right.
No. Hold on. Well, Jerry wanted to say something. What were you saying?
Well, it was also called the Bureau in the United Kingdom. But also in 1938, a great invention was invented right here in Rochester, New York, by Chester Carlson.
Yes, it was. I thought of that first, but not everyone has one. And that's the other part of his thing. He says now everybody's got one.
And the second hour.
So unless it's a disease, I can't think of what it might be.
I'll give another clue if somebody doesn't get it.
There you go.
All right. Thank you, Jerry.
Tell you what, I'll even do a second hour. If nobody gets it, I'll give two good clues.
Oh, two good clues. All right. Thank you, Jerry.
The first patent on the ballpoint pen was in 1888.
Yeah.
But it wasn't actually built until 1938.
Yeah, 1888, that's when the fax machine was invented.
No, that's a trick question. When was the fax machine invented? In the middle 1600s.
Well, you're right.
Two guys on a mountain waving flags, and you lay your dot down as you're walking back and forth to a metronome, and that's the fax machine.
Right,
the electronic fax machine was in the 50s, but...
All right. That's just another nice guess, though, Jerry. Our next caller is Patrick from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Patrick. What's your question?
Yeah, I'll take a stab at the trivia question.
Okay.
Nylon pantyhose.
I know I have mine, but I don't know that Dave has his.
Thank you very much, but no.
Plus, now I remember that from Hogan's Heroes. That was what they would always bribe the German secretaries with. I've got new nylons.
Yeah, that actually was in the real world, too. Yeah. All right, so what's your question, Patrick?
All right, I got a couple of domain names that seem to have been taken over by spammers. They're using my domain name with their prefix.
Yeah.
You know, is there anything I can do about that?
The only thing that you can do is to trace them back to where they're really coming from and then complain to the company that's using them.
You can send an email address in anybody's name. It doesn't have to be yours. That's the problem.
Right. They're not actually hijacking your system. They're just using your domain name. That's also happening in my wife's domain name at this moment, too. And other than tracing them back, which is hard but not impossible, and complaining to the company. Now, the problem is if it's somewhere overseas, particularly in any of the Baltic nations, they don't care. They are not going to help you. Yeah. So all you can do is weather it. And I'm sorry, Patrick, but I wish I had a better answer for you. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple minutes. Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco. It's 40 minutes after the hour, and here's a bit of trivia for you. It's Sound Bites on 1180 WHAM. Our theme song. Welcome back, everybody.
You know who this is, don't you?
No.
It's Britney Spears.
Because now she's
crazy. Good
old
Mrs. Clean herself.
Yeah.
You know, it's really...
Well,
they're saying, who would have guessed that Kevin Federline would have been the stable one in that relationship?
Yeah, right. Well, you know, the funny part about it is if you go to wham1180.com, there is a Britney Spears update on the Wham website. Just in case people want to know minute by minute what's going on.
Look, I said this Friday on the air, I said, I think she's back in rehab, but I'm only one man. I can't keep track.
Wait a minute. Bottom line, between that and Anna Nicole Smith, it's like, who really cares? Is it going to change
my
life?
All right, it's really great
her
for
hair,
the astronaut lady,
her
because
hair
now
is
she's
going,
out of the news.
Right. Her hair is going up on eBay that was cut off.
Yeah. And the scissors she cut him off with.
It's called
BuyBritney'sHair.com. My favorite, though, is they photoshopped the picture of Beth and Chet. And they've now got a picture of Beth bald, and the it's up on the website, and it's the poll up on the Wham website. Should Beth go bald for the wedding? It's very funny.
Oh wow!
Very funny. All right, before we get back to the phones, you know, the hardware just keeps getting better. Samsung is getting ready to produce extremely fast memory chips to be used on future graphics cards. Customers are starting to get samples of Samsung's 2 gigahertz. GDDR4 graphics double data rate 4 memory, which will deliver 4 gigabytes of data per second. It currently is mass producing GDDR4 memory with 2.4 gigabits per second of bandwidth. Most graphics cards from NVIDIA and Advanced Micro Devices ATI division currently use GDDR3 memory, boost performance, and you'll also find that type of memory in the PlayStation 3. The leading edge of the graphics card market is expected to start embracing GDDR4 over the next 12 to 18 months. So it's all about to get even harder and faster and harder to buy and faster to use. So be careful. Now, do we have anybody who wants to do the trivia? Yes, we do. The trivia question
John
one more time.
Long Island, in 1938, this item was invented, and now everybody in the U.S. has one. John in Long Island.
John in Long Island, are you listening to us live?
Yes, hi, how are you?
Over the internet?
Yes, over the internet, streaming over the internet. Listen every Sunday, enjoy the show immensely.
That's what I meant to ask, because obviously you're listening live if you're answering a trivia question. That was my stupidity. Go ahead, John, what's the answer to the question?
I was going to say that, or I have a heck of an antenna from
Yeah.
You say everybody uses it, or everybody has one.
Yep.
I'm not sure. Maybe I don't know if Nick has one, but I did a little research and I found out that the Marden toothbrush was invented in 1939.
Yes, you got it right.
Way, John from Long Island, New York, the toothbrush.
Now, does Nick own one or not?
I do. I don't own a Martin, but I do own a toothbrush. I own several, as a matter of fact.
See, my other two clues were going to be one, even young children have them. And the other clue was going to be that it was in New Jersey.
First used in 2000 or 3000 BC, and then in 1498 in China, they had boar's hair, stiff bristles. But it was DuPont. You know, every day, thank God for DuPont. Spandex, Lycra, nylon, neoprene. Thank God for DuPont.
It was called Dr. West's Miracle Toothbrush.
Yep.
As a matter of fact, last night on Discovery Channel, I love this one program, How Do They Make It? They showed making the toothbrush, and this one machine sitting there putting all these darn bristles in. It's unbelievable. All the holes, it's shoving them in.
Now I got to find this. Isaac Asimov wrote a paper in 93 called Why Do We Brush Our Teeth?
If you're out in the woods and you can find an apple tree, fray the end of a small branch and you can brush your teeth with that.
Yeah, that's what they were doing in ancient civilizations called the chew stick.
Yeah, see? Well, thank you, John. You're a winner.
So do I win a lifetime supply of Colgate or something?
You win a lifetime subscription to the Soundbites website. All you have to do is go sign up.
Tell you
it
what.
It won't cost you a penny.
The satisfaction of a job well done.
John, email me. At david@nrightpc.com.
We'll send you a used toothbrush.
No, I was going to give him my old toothpaste, too. Yeah. No, email me and I'll send you a free soundbite CD.
There you go. You can't beat that. Thank you, John. Upholding the honor of Long Island, New York is John, who answered the trivia question from all the way out in Long Island. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you at 49 minutes after the hour at Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
Some good ones.
Holy cow, they threatened me with that one, and I hadn't heard it before.
Well, here I am turning my head going, oh my God, is the mic on? You're singing in there.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
He's Steve Ray.
I'm Steve Ray. Sorry,
And I'm Rob Linton.
No, and it's 54 minutes after the hour.
But we should mention what I'm in the middle of here. The archive server's back up, but it has a different address, so you're going to have to resubscribe in your podcast reader. And we're going to have to resubmit the address into the iTunes directory, so the new address gets listed now. So people are saying, why won't my iTunes pick it up anymore? Because the address changed.
All right. So on the other hand, about a thousand shows have been downloaded since Friday morning when it went back up.
Yep. And folks should still send in their checks to help cover the price.
I would like to thank the three people who have sent in checks to help me cover the cost of the server so far. Thank you very, very much. I would like to thank the two people who wrote to say thank you, as opposed to the 300 or 400 people who swore at me about why the soundbite server is done. I got to be honest with you, that kind of porks me off a little bit. I thought our users were politer and friendlier than that. Apparently, I was wrong. Let's go back to the phones. Our next caller is Suzanne from Webster, New York. Welcome, Suzanne. What's your question?
Hi. Yes, we've been having trouble with the computer shutting off spontaneously. This has been happening randomly, and then it comes right back on again. We've tried various things like cleaning out files and doing the security tango. None of that worked. I then set it up so that it would not come back on, and we've been getting the blue screen, and there's a stop message on it, and it says OX00008E, and then there's also something about checking the BIOS updates. And I was wondering what the next steps would be to try to solve this problem.
I would say take it into a professional and have them take a look at it.
Yeah, it's either, and I don't have that stop message in front of me, but that's a hardware problem. It's either your memory or your, most likely memory.
OEs are usually memory.
If you have more than one memory card in your computer, take one of them out and see what happens, and then take that one out and put the other one back in and see what happens.
Of course, make sure the machine is off when you do this.
Yes.
Yeah. Right. Okay. So the first thing, I mean, we could try just taking out one of the RAM cards here, and then seeing if that gets resolved.
Now the computer will probably get really, really, really slow because it doesn't have enough RAM anymore. But if it doesn't crash, you know, you found the bad RAM.
Yep.
Right. Okay. And then if it doesn't seem to be the RAM, then could it be something else?
Yes, it could be, and that's where a diagnostic, where they could put it on the bench, and just literally over the course of the day and night, run a series of tests, and it's a battery of tests. Like in our shop, we just constantly let it run and run and run, trying to get it to fail. Because usually that's what happens. You know, folks will bring stuff in and say, well, it's not doing it. We get it, and it doesn't do it. So that's where if we put it on the bench, sometimes we can get it to fail and actually recreate.
Yeah, it may not fail until it's been running for 4 or 5 hours.
Exactly, yeah.
Yep.
Okay, so we'll try the RAM thing first, and then if not, we'll have somebody look at it.
There you go.
Terrific. Thanks very much.
You're quite welcome.
That's one of the things that I had trouble with the sound bites with the archive server. That particular machine, I ran about 3 days' worth of tests on the RAM, and it turns out it wasn't the RAM at all. It was actually the motherboard was pretty well just fried.
Which is odd and sometimes very confusing because you take the RAM out and the computer works okay. Because now the bad slot that it was in isn't being used.
Right. No, in this case, it had completely hosed the. I had two drives in the machine, one for all the operating system stuff and one for the archives themselves. Mm-hmm. And of course, it hosed the archive drive.
Of course,
naturally, the other drive was fine, but the archive drive was gone, and that was all caused by the
Now we need the camera pointed in the control room.
That's right, because Glenn is doing the robot or something in the other room. I don't know what that's about, but whatever it is,
he's having fun.
He's brilliant at it, I must say that. He's brilliant at it.
We should mention the camera's back up now, too.
Right, the show cam is back up. What with everything else that we did on the archive server, I moved Soundbites itself and the Soundbites archive. We should probably tell people where that is in case they haven't quite tweaked to the fact that they can just go to the Soundbites website and click on the archive server's backlink. It is now at soundbites.org, and that's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, /archives with an S, ACHARCHIVES, archives. And that will take you to the entire archive server as it used to be, and you'll be able then to download all the shows you've missed. Again, if you've got an iPod, if you've got a link to the podcast, whether it's in iTunes or anywhere else, again, you need to go to the archive site and click on the podcast link, the one that says, "Hey podcasters, here's your feed," and that will give you the new thing. You just change your link in iTunes or iPodder or Podfeeder or whatever one you use, and it will then be right. We're going to take another quick break. Glenn Lamberts is in with the news, the weather, the sports, all the important things that you listen to Wham for, and then
and the
on
bad
the other
dancing.
Side and the bad dancing. And on the other side of the news, we'll be back with a very, very special guest, I hope, and a whole lot more stuff for Dave Enright, Steve Ray, the long-suffering Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco. At 59 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Sound Bites on 1180 WHAM.
Thousand-watt News Radio 1180 WHAM proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show at 222-1180, *1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers, or the One Communications line at 1-800-295-1180. Now alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on 50,000-watt 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And it's 7 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Soundbites. We have a very... Normally, this is the section of the program in which I talk about the website and the poll and all of that stuff. But we have a very special guest to talk to today. Angelo Mancuso is a producer, a director, an actor. He does documentaries and stuff like that. And he just recently you haven't completed yet, have you? Well, first of all, welcome. Welcome, Angelo. How are you?
Great, Nick. How are you? Good morning. Good morning to Soundbites crew.
Yep. Thank you.
Dave and Steve and Rob here with us as well. And you have recently completed principal photography on your next movie, right?
That's correct. American Harvest. We are currently in post right now, and my G5 is currently pumping out these batches of files that I could take to the colorist up in Toronto tomorrow. So,
now you have a great story about the technology, and it really starts at the beginning of the shoot when you were needing storage space.
It starts at the beginning of this shoot when I was needing storage space. And we'll jump to the fact that I was in a hotel in Cordial, Georgia, in the heat. It was about 100 degrees, and a transformer went. And that was at the beginning where I say no to Fat 32 at this point, from now and into perpetuity.
Right.
We ended up losing a drive, and we had all of our files stored on it. You and Soundbites crew had given me terrific advice. We called in back. This was probably July of 06. And we use data rescue on to recover the files. And, we're using massive amounts of storage. I just bought a LaCie, and it's the D2, and it's got FireWire 800 on it. It's 2 terabytes, which puts me currently at 6 terabytes of storage right now.
It's probably barely enough.
Right, and that's becoming pretty common these days.
Yeah, right.
Can I double it?
Yeah. Yeah. Then you might have enough room.
Well, we do run into the next limit. You know, we had the 32 meg limit on the hard drives and then the 127 gig limit on the hard drives. The current limit is 16 exabytes.
Wow. So, and Ange could run into that.
Will take a while to get up to that, yep. There's like there's three or four more prefixes after terabytes before you get to exabytes.
Yeah, but Ange's story does not end with the amount of storage he needs, does it?
No, it continues after that. We have had, I'll tell you, I feel in a lot of ways, you know, they talk about Thomas Edison knowing 1,000 ways not to invent the light bulb.
Right.
And I probably know 1,000 ways not to export my movie to the colorist right now. It's been a huge, actually, I was working with Glue Tools, which is, there's a plug-in, and I'll kind of back up just a little bit. What we're doing currently with this movie is to bring it to the colorist. They require DPX files. My movie is 100 minutes, so I have approximately 144,000 DPX files, which turns out to be at 7.9 megs each. It turns out to be 1,140 gigs approximately. So, and they're big RAW files, and they look gorgeous on the DaVinci, which is what the movie studios use to color a movie these days. And the difficulty you have is that DVC Pro HD shoots on a imager, which is 1280 by 1080. That's dots per inch. And DVC Pro codec is smart enough to know that I intended 16 by 9, which is the widescreen. And it essentially takes the image, and within the codec does a calculation and makes it 1920 by 1080. The problem with that is that when you take this to the next level and you want to do a film out eventually or bring it to a colorist, they don't care that the codec is in the Final Cut Pro and can do it. They don't have the codec to do it. So what I started with was outputting these DPX files in 1280 by 1080. And essentially that's like a 4x3 or a regular television screen essentially. And they had no way to bring them to 16x9. Long story short, right. I get with the developer from Glue Tools. And we're able finally through this workaround to create a file that is the proper format. However, the other day, I'm all excited. My LaCie 2 terabyte drive comes in, and it's FireWire 800. And I'm thinking, well, this is great. If I start outputting on Friday afternoon, it should be done by Saturday evening. Well, somewhere about 8 o'clock or 9 o'clock on Friday night, it get an error out of memory. And it's, how can this be? And I'm looking on the LaCie drive, and I still have 1.7 terabytes left. But evidently, there's a problem. I've only got 8 gigs of RAM in my machine. So evidently, the 8 gigs of RAM is where I'm running into limitations. So consequently, what I'm doing is doing small 5-minute batches. And it's an interesting story because, you know, as the producer and director of the show,
right.
You've got to be able to do certain things in business, certain things dealing with subjects, certain things handling the camera. Then you go over to the edit, and it's a whole other skill set.
Right.
So everywhere you turn. So, you know, I'm sitting there picking my brain as best I can and other smart people, I hope, that are giving me some good advice. And I sit there, and I can't come up with an answer. So I had a question for you three. Is there a bottleneck on between the LaCie, which I have right now, which is 2 terabytes, and my 8 gigs of RAM? I look at my activity monitor, and towards the end of the batch, my current limit right now, my outputs are about 56 to 58 gigs. And it seems like my upper limit is 60 when I run out of memory. What I have to do is I have to back out of Final Cut Pro, save everything first, of course, dismount the LaCie drive, turn my machine off, the G5, then reboot it, and then mount the drive, and then Final Cut Pro, and then go to my next 5-minute batch of the movie. Again.
Holy cow.
And it's a lot of work. I mean, I've been doing this since Friday evening, and currently I am at, last look, 78 minutes of my 110 minutes of my movie, and I think I've got 7 5-minute batches left to do.
Could that be a limitation, though, Stephen, the program?
Could be. There's always a bottleneck somewhere.
Yeah, and I would think, I mean, sounds like you got one heck of a kick-butt machine. I mean, you could always drop it off here to Soundbites, and we'll test it out for you for a while.
Actually, I did get to play with it before I delivered it to him.
Because
I set it up for him. Yeah.
Well, we could try it out for another 6 months. Well,
do you think it is a memory problem? I mean, in other words, if he doubled or tripled the memory, because no matter what else Final Cut Pro is doing, it's got to have enough RAM to put that much information in.
But yeah. I'm thinking more towards the program that, you know, even the program's got to hit a chunk where it's going to be too big or it chokes.
Well, no, the theory behind the software is it'll do a whole movie, right? Ange?
Yeah, it does do a whole movie.
Certainly. You say, yeah, but that's the whole thing. You said the key word, theory.
No, people are using it. I mean, Final Cut.
Yeah, Final Cut won an Oscar for how great it is.
I can't export a whole movie. That's not an issue. But with these new DPX files, which are essentially raw files, this is something new to Apple and new to the developers. And therein lies, you know, where
the
we're
challenge.
At right now. Yeah, what I've seen, though, is that in this workflow that we've developed, and I believe at this moment we may be the only production company in the country or perhaps anywhere that's dealing with Final Cut Pro at this level to get these files out. You know, it's kind of like the story of the pioneers and the settlers. The pioneers get the arrows in their back.
Exactly.
The settlers come along and say, well, it's safe. Well, yeah, there's a lot to it. But what I have noticed is that when I do dismount the lessee before I shut the machine down, it will free up about, 6 to 7 gigs of my RAM. So somewhere it's being, you know, the RAM is being hung. I think what I'm probably
disk cache, maybe.
That's what I was about to say.
Yeah.
Go to 16 gigs of RAM. I mean,
yeah, the two gig chips are expensive, though.
Yeah, the 16 gig would probably, well, certainly double the amount you could do at least. But what I'm thinking of is the disk cache. Now, Steve, is there a way in the Mac to change the size of the cache that you keep?
Well, there's a preference in FileCut itself to change the cache it uses. In the operating system, there's no GUI interface for changing your cache amount, but there's probably something in the Unix layer.
So if Ange goes into Final Cut and says use what, more or less?
Yeah. Try more, see if it works. Yeah, try more, see if it works. If not, try less.
See what it's set for.
One or the other.
If it's set for 6 gig, make it less. If it's set for 2 gig, make it more.
You guys are beautiful. I love this advice.
Yeah.
Hey.
Well, like we said, we haven't played around with this software much, so
especially in these file sizes, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just amazing.
Just let's put it this way, Ange, before you try any of this stuff, let's make sure that you got it backed up so we don't cause you any other major problems.
Right.
I think I'll try this after I do my outputs, which I finally have got this workflow. 5 minutes takes about 1 hour to output.
Yeah.
So
you've got about 7-8 hours left to work.
So hopefully I'll get done by the Oscars.
Now,
yeah, right.
Now he's on a quad processing machine.
Absolutely.
And you know, people have said, oh, quad processors, what do you need that for? Well,
this.
He needs more.
Yeah, right.
So when we get that 8-core Xeon running out, you know, who knows?
So this is now the third movie you've produced.
Well, it's probably maybe a few more than that, but certainly, yeah. I've worked on a number of other projects here in town. After Image with John Mellencamp.
Right.
That went way back to 2000 already. Can you believe it was 6 years ago?
Yeah.
And then Checkout in 2001. I worked on Cherry Crush in summer of 2005, I believe it was. I've had the produced and had the lead role in several other smaller films. So I've gone back and forth and will continue to develop a career like that. Currently, this movie that I'm doing now, American Harvest, we just got good news about a week ago. We got into the Buffalo Niagara Film Festival.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much. Just saw that Louis Gossett Jr., who I met up in Toronto at the film festival up there a year or two ago, nice fella, is going to be one of the special guests up there. And that's at the end of March, the 26th to the 31st. And that's a big deal for us because finally, well, one, because it's in our backyard.
Right.
And that we want to be able to celebrate with, you know, friends and be able to do it here. But it's also American Harvest is about agriculture as it relates to immigration. And it's all about those jobs that people won't do. And there's it's a complex, difficult discussion. Lonsberry probably would sit there and argue, I'm sure. But, you know, the fact of the matter is that we have farmers in America, and that we need to start to value the farmers in America as much as we value the food that we eat.
Yep.
And that's important, because if we get to a point where we start losing these farmers, which is potentially a problem, we're going to end up in the same boat that we are with the oil that we import on foreign dependency. And I don't want to do that with our food. I don't think that's a safe bet when we have to start to depend on foreign sources for our food.
Yeah, actually, I still remember a quote Rush Limbaugh years and years ago, the illegal immigration and the migrant farmers out west. You know, if you don't mind paying $10 a head for your lettuce, we'll stop illegal immigration.
All right, I'm afraid we're done. Ange, thank you so very much. His website is AmericanHarvestMovie.com. That's AmericanHarvestMovie.com. We'll have that on our website. I want to thank Angelo Mancuso, who's a filmmaker, a Mac user, and a techno victim. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes on Soundbites. Thanks, Ange.
Call Wham now at Wham's Bob Matthews.
When you're coming down hard on the other sports for cheating with performance-enhancing drugs, if you give auto racing a free ticket on their cheating, I don't think that's fair.
Weeknight 6 till 8 on Wham.
You ain't nothing but a hound dog. You're crying all the time.
I was listening. Welcome back. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Wright.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 25 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Soundbite.
And who was that again?
I know that's Elvis Presley. Shut up. All right. Before we get back to the phones, very quickly, I want to talk a little bit about what goes on at our website at soundbites.org. That's bites with a Y. Francis would like us to remind you. Every week, we do a poll. Last week's poll was, have you changed your router's default password because there are new exploits out to take over your router by using the default password. 320...
Plus, accidentally, you can change your neighbor's router because it has the same name and password as yours.
Right. 320 of you have voted, making it number 124 on the all-time hit list. 50% of you said yes, 25% of you don't have a router, 16% said no, and 30 of you said password. This week's poll is about an interesting little thing. There are a couple of guys who want to perform a social experiment wherein people all over the world boycott computers for an entire day. Willing participants are encouraged to forego any and all PC usage on Tuesday, the 24th of March. So our
Wait
poll
a minute.
Question
I
this
can't
week,
do that.
Well, listen for the answers.
You're covered in the poll. Can you stop using your computer for an entire day? Yes, it's just a tool. No, it's my job.
Oh,
no, it's my life. It. And why?
Now, yes, see, I can stop using my computer just
here.
Right. Yeah.
In fact, there's many days I can't use my computer because my wife and son are on it.
Right. So far, at the soundbites.org website is where you can vote. And it's easy. Soundbites with a Y. The poll is right on the left as you start up the system. And once you've put in your choice for a poll, you'll see a little yellow box underneath that says, give us your opinion. Click on that link. It takes you to my website, asknick.com.
That's asknick.com.
He said,
give us some butthead.
Nick, I don't know what that's about. Where you can actually put in an opinion, because I know that for you folks, the mere clicking of a button is not enough in general. And then when you're done with that, come on back to the Soundbites website and join us in the mayhem. All right, we are back to the phones. And our I should tell you that we've had 1,025 people download the archives since Friday morning.
Well, we were five episodes behind,
yeah.
So
they're certainly catching up.
So
I'm
is that 1,000 people downloading five, or is that...
No, that's 1,000 total downloads. It's 1,000 total downloads. It's still a pretty impressive number. Our next caller is Bob from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Bob. What's your question?
I have a two-part question on web browsers. Between IE, Netscape, Firefox, and Opera, is any one of those four considered maybe more secure as far as 128-bit or 256 encryption?
Anyone in terms of the encryption, no. It's the same encryption algorithm for all of them. So from that point of view, no. None of them are any more secure than others. It comes down then to personal preference. I prefer Firefox. Followed by Opera, followed by Netscape, followed by IE.
Well, there's other
followed
issues.
Followed by nothing, followed by IE.
Right, there's other issues in IE that make it more dangerous. You know, you go to an encrypted site, it's encrypted, yeah. Mm-hmm. But it's so easy to go to a site, even inadvertently, you spell something wrong, and it downloads and installs a program, usually spyware, sometimes a virus, in your computer without you knowing it.
Right. But in terms of which one has better 128-bit encryption, they're identical.
Okay. The other part of the question is, in Opera, there's a feature called Wand, where when you click on it, you know, it'll store, remember your user ID and password on a website you visited. How secure is that? Is that any more secure than when Windows asks you that question, store your user ID and password?
In general, you can either store these things in clear text or in encrypted, right? And really, if you're going to do your passwords and all of that stuff, it's better to use encrypted. Firefox does that. You can also set a master password so that every time you start your machine, before it will keep track of that stuff, it asks you for that password. That's even more secure.
Is there a feature in Opera where you can encrypt your user ID or your passwords when you visit websites?
They are already.
Pardon?
They are already. Almost all, in fact, I believe all of them will encrypt for you. It's not great encryption, but it is encryption.
Now, Opera even has a version for cell phones and the Nintendo Wii game computer. That's a pretty cool little program.
Yeah.
So the only other thing I can do is set a master password, and I should be pretty much secure as far as storing those passwords through Opera.
Yep.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Oh, speaking of passwords and everything else, one thing we should talk about, which we haven't said anything here since we got on the show, is about Maggie Brooks this past week about the libraries and the porn and everything else. And and again, this is not reflecting on you guys or the station, but my opinion, and again, this is solely my opinion, is the library is just like a business. These are tools that they're supplying for the general public to use. And it's just like you at work. If you're sitting there, your boss supplies you a computer that you can use. But he can also dictate where you go on the web because you did not physically pay for those computers. The library has purchased those computers. They own them. They should be able to say where they go.
What I want to know is, why is it even a question? Why is it even a possibility for a public library to have those sites allowed?
No, and because it is a public library, taxpayers are buying that equipment through their taxes. So in essence, I did pay for those computers. I can go wherever I want.
Well, here's the argument, though. So you could argue that same thing with a school.
Yeah.
It's a school, but taxpayers have funded. You know what I'm saying? I mean, it's just.
But again, school has control because they technically own them. They're responsible. Right. If they get caught with porn and everything else, they're going to come in and nail the school allowing.
That was the story a couple of weeks ago about a substitute teacher got arrested for porn on the computer in the classroom, and she's saying it was a pop-up ad, and the school said, no, you had to click on that right there to make that happen. And her defense attorney said, no, it's a pop-up, and the prosecution never even investigated. Because pop-ups happen. You can get porn on your
computer. Pop-ups happen.
Right. You get porn on your computer inadvertently all the time, and there's nothing you can do about it.
Well, what's funny is some of these networks...
And you stick to that story.
Yeah.
Some of these networks, I mean, where I work, you can't even get to MySpace. It's been blocked.
Right.
Well, the thing that is, too, and this is another segue, we've been getting in our forums right now in Soundbites, you know, a lot of advertisements for porn and all this other stuff, and I've been trying to keep up with it. It's a daily thing where 2 or 3 times a day I'm going in and blocking these people out. So I am working at it, but, you know, it's like these folks have no lives, and they're in third world countries and everything else. You know, if you want to go for it, folks can easily find it. I mean, that's not an issue, but they got to keep putting it in the forums, the advertising. It's like, you know what? This is ours, and I'm going to block you because, again, we own this site, and I'm going to block any of that stuff because, sorry, I don't care to see
it. We've had stories about that before. It used to be just an annoyance. Now people are getting paid, say, a penny a page for every page you put an advertisement on.
Right.
But as far as the library, though, I still think the library owns those computers. They're responsible, so they should have the say, just like your boss does, you know, with your work computer. They own it. They're going to be held responsible. They get caught with a bunch of porn on there. They're going to come in and, you know, the software cops come in and say, oh, sorry, you got all this porn on there. You're responsible. Boom. Slap you off to jail.
Remember the thing a few years ago when video players in cars started getting common? And
yeah, right.
Someone was watching an adult movie in their car, and the person behind them at the red light was upset.
So I applaud her, you know, for saying, you know, sticking behind it because, yeah, one parent could be there, but what was it? A couple years ago in Fairport, mother's going by a terminal with her kid. And matter of fact, we had her on the show when we were filling in for Bob. And here's this guy looking at porn. It's like, hello, you got to consider, you're in a public area.
That actually happened to my wife last week. She took my daughter to the library and turned and looked, and there was a guy looking at porn on the computer.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Banned it. If you want to do that,
well, no, see, I'm or at do the like other the side. I'm saying put it somewhere
right,
where
do
you,
like the bookstores do. You put it in the back behind a curtain. You have to show ID to get there.
But what I'm saying, right. though, is the library owns them. They
but
should be able to control.
Extra,
the library's job is to see to it that the public has access to information. And the ACLU says that as long as it's legal, they have to provide access to it. So it's just going to be a matter
but
of lawyers.
But see, these are supposed to, all right. Here.
Look, you're in America. America has freedom yep. of speech. It has certain rights.
But,
and you can decide in a private place what you want to do with those rights. In a public place, we are America. We are Americans.
But the
I may not like it myself. I may not want to look at it yep. myself. But I will defend to the death the right of any American to follow an American freedom.
But what I'm saying, though, is, too, again, the library is there for learning.
No, the library is a public access information site. That's what it's for. And as long as it is public information and access to public information, you have a right as an American citizen to watch what you want to watch and look at what you want to watch, as long as it's legal.
But then I have the same right to say, when I go by there, and if you're looking
that's
at
exactly
I find
right.
it offensive,
so you solve
get
the problem.
It off there.
You solve the problem by making those sites available only in an area that the general public can't get to.
But now that's going to cost me more public dollars.
Well, that's what the price of freedom. Get over it. Pay it and shut up and move on. Our next caller is Leo from Webster, New York. Welcome, Leo. What's your question?
Hi there. How you doing?
Good.
We're coming down.
Okay. Yeah, don't get me started either. First, I want to say thanks. I got through last week about a AVG question, and you were spot on about, one, downloading a new copy, and two, doing it through the administrator, so
yep.
kudos.
But good. Glad. Glad.
That,
we're the guy you helped last week. That's good.
Well, now that that's working great, my computer has decided it doesn't want to play anymore. It doesn't light, start, do anything. So I know that somewhere along the line there's an open in the circuit and, you know, needs to be addressed. But what I'm wondering, particularly because my brother or my kid showed me this device where he took a laptop computer, you know, that he had that was broken.
Right.
Took the hard drive out, plugged it into this thing, USB ported into his Mac, and now he can read files off of that and everything.
Sure, yeah.
Okay. Now, I'm wondering if I were, you know, based on if it costs more than it's worth to fix the thing, if I just did something like that, plugged it into this, plugged it into another computer, would the programs that, like, require subscription keys and things like that I have on it now still function?
Theoretically, there are a whole lot of things about that, but if it's all on one drive and the drive is still good, it should boot up in another computer. Now, if you're running XP, there may be a whole bunch of time where it's downloading new drivers.
But the thing of it is, though, no, if he hooks it up as the second drive, not the initial drive, and he's going through a USB port with XP, the minute he hooks it up, it'll just show up as another drive.
But all the things that are in the registry won't be there.
No, well,
yeah, you just
can't run an application
from a second drive,
right?
Because the register entries have to be on your boot.
You have to put it as the boot drive in the secondary machine, in the new machine,
and which would mean you'd have to reinstall if it had Windows over Windows, because it's that machine was in a laptop, so it knows about that hardware, which is part of the registry. And if you put it into another machine, you got to reinstall Windows over Windows because it's got to find out about the new hardware that this hard drive has to know about.
All right. So if let's say I bought just a used version, because I know laptops change over time. If I just bought a used version of the same type of laptop, could I theoretically just take it, unplug it, put in the new hardware?
Theoretically, if it's the same hardware, and you made that old drive the the boot drive in the new laptop, theoretically,
but
that
the
will
hard drive the problem has is, to match exactly.
Right.
To
that's what I'm saying. Even, it's the same. If it's
well,
the same
even if it's the
model.
Same model, many times there's different hardware inside of it.
Yep.
Well, that's true. But yep. if it is identical enough, it will boot.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
But there's no promise.
Identical enough.
Yeah. Yes. It's got to be exact.
Well,
yeah.
We buy whenever we buy new lab equipment, we buy all the same machine,
mm-hmm.
right? So that we can ghost all the images yep. and move them over and blah 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 blah. But once, you know, when one dies, we can't just pop another
right.
type of machine in there.
Right. Because the bio right. even down to the BIOS version could change.
So you're kind of halfway there, Leo.
Okay.
Thanks.
All right,
we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
Call Wham now at 222.
I just played the music. We'll just sit and listen to the music.
Yeah.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
At 43 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Soundbites. Hey, here's a great story.
Well, actually, before that, there was a big argument the other day with the Grammys coming up. Van Halen, who sold more records, the David Lee Roth Van Halen or the Sammy Hagar Van Halen?
The Grammys already happened.
Sake. Yeah, but that was just...
That must have been it was probably an old radio show for the President's
Week. Oh, it was before that.
Yeah.
Well, he's coming back, you know. Is that what you're saying?
That's the big thing, yeah.
He's coming back.
And it'll probably last a month or two it has in the past.
Sammy and Dave were touring together for a while. One would open one day, one would open the other day. And I saw some interviews with Sammy Hagar saying how what a jerk David Lee Roth was, because when David opened, he was just sort of lackluster because he didn't want to ramp the audience up for Sammy.
Right.
so it was really bad show.
Nice.
And David's got a lounge act in Vegas now.
Yeah.
A blogger who wrote his own blogging engine called Forest Blog recently noticed that none other than the MPAA was using his work and had completely violated his Linkware license by removing all links back to the Forest Blog site and had not credited him in any way. Patrick Robin, a 29-year-old web developer from South England, is the developer of an ASP-based blogging platform called Forest Blog. He distributed it freely under a Linkware license, asking that anyone who used it merely link back to a site where Forest Blog is offered for download. If anyone wants to remove the links back to a site, they must purchase a license. A personal license costs $20 and a commercial one costs $50 in American money. Amazingly, the MPAA seems to think they're above formalities like licenses and such. The MPAA blog, which is located at www.mpaa.org/blog_default.asp, was using Patrick's Forest Blog software, but it completely stripped it of his name and the links back to his site. He only found it accidentally when he happened to visit the MPAA site. Clearly, there seems to be a lack of concern by the MPAA of others' copyrights. Therefore, it is unsurprising that their customers seem to have the same attitude toward their movies. It's a case of the pot calling the kettle beige. All right, we're off back to the phones, and our next caller is Jeff from Ontario, New York. Welcome, Jeff. What's your question?
Hi, guys. Yeah, I'm running XP. And I've been using Outlook Express for email.
Yep.
And all of a sudden, yesterday, I started getting a runtime error. It says this application has requested the runtime to terminate it in an unusual way. It's very unusual. But I've uninstalled Outlook. I've reinstalled it. I've gone back and reset the computer to a week or so ago. And thinking that I might have been automatically updated, but nothing. Try
downloading Thunderbird, installing
that. Well, first, it's very likely that what you have is a virus of some sort. Have you danced the Security Tango?
Not recently, but I do have it.
Yeah, you need to do that. What it sounds like is that Outlook... the good news is... the good news is that whatever you have has not installed correctly or has been partially removed and therefore isn't running, but it is also causing Outlook Express to die.
It could be a corrupt file in his identity.
Yep.
And there's
that
inbox repair tool. Is that still hiding in Windows somewhere?
Yeah, I believe so.
In XP, it is.
Yeah. There's an inbox repair tool hiding somewhere that will try to repair any damage to your mail identity.
But like I say, the easier way is just download and install Thunderbird. And, oh, by the way, you get better junk control.
Yeah, that's...
with a freebie.
That could be helpful. My wife told me you were going to tell me that.
So. Yeah, well, she was right.
We try not to encourage people to use Outlook Express. It's not a bad program, but it is the number one target for every virus writer in the world.
And Trojan.
And even if you want to continue using Outlook Express, it's often a good troubleshooting tip to try loading all your mail into another program and then delete the Outlook mail and load it back if you really want.
Okay. What happens, I can't get anywhere near anything that's in Outlook Express at the moment. What happens to my address book and all that good stuff if I download Thunderbird?
It'll import it all in.
Right. When you install it, it'll say, oh, I see you have Outlook Express. Want to import everything?
Ah.
And you
but
say yes.
I ran into a problem sort of this week converting someone over to Thunderbird. It only copies the current identity. If you have multiple identities in Outlook Express, you have to open Outlook Express, switch to the next identity, go back to Thunderbird, and import that identity separately.
Right.
Which was annoying because she had six identities.
Well, yes. I only have the one. Yeah, there is a repair tool. It's called scanpst.exe. You can do a search for that and then run it, and that may fix the problem. But I got to be honest with you. It is our preference here on Soundbites to not use Outlook Express.
Got it. What was that scan dot?
Scan PST. PST is the type of file that Outlook uses. I guess it stands for post. So scanpst.exe. Do a search on your hard drive for it. It's buried deeply in the common files
that'll
folder.
That'll be on our link list in a minute.
Yep. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you at 49 minutes after the hour at Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
At 54 minutes after the hour, it's
Boy
Soundbites.
George.
This is Karma Chameleon.
Yeah.
But it's not Boy George, though.
It's not Boy George. I forget his name.
All right. Well, who would do a cover of Karma Chameleon? All right, fine.
Anyway. Yeah.
All right. We're going to go back to the phones. We're going to do a lightning round. Give us your question, and we'll make up an answer. Our next caller is Jim from Irondequoit, New York. Welcome, Jim. What's your question?
Linux to surf the net and just generally as an operating system, what's the best type to use?
You'll find 100 different answers if you ask 50 different people. My personal favorite is Ubuntu, U-B-U-N-T-U, at ubuntulinux.com.
There are several of them listed on our link list already.
Right. There's PC Linux OS. There's just a bunch of them. Like I said, I personally prefer Ubuntu, but that's just my own choice. Most any of them, and they're all in the link list, will give you a pretty good start, and I think Linux is a great operating system. I'm very impressed with everything that it does. Drew from Rochester, New York, question on Adaware.
Yes, that's correct. I recently moved to town, and before I had Roadrunner hooked up, I had my computer hooked up and ran Adaware repeatedly for no particular reason.
Mm-hmm.
yet each time it came up with a malware program or notice, even though I hadn't been on the internet.
Are you running Symantec's antivirus?
Yes.
Yeah, it thinks Adaware is a Trojan.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, some of the programs fight each other because they have definition lists of what is spyware, so another program sees that and thinks it's spyware.
Yeah, so you don't worry about it.
Didn't think so. It was more of a curiosity.
Yeah.
It's also possible that Adaware is finding some malicious software that it can't remove, and that's why it finds it again. Sometimes you have to run it in safe mode so that none of the other spy programs are actually running when you're trying to remove them.
Right. All right. Our next caller is John from Rochester, New York. Welcome, John. What's your question?
Hey, I just bought a Nintendo Wii.
Ah, how do you like it?
I love it. It's the best thing you ever... It's the best thing you can ever play. I mean, I'm stuck there playing Madden for hours. Even my wife got into it.
It's cheap. It's only $250 when you look at the PlayStation 3, which is $600. That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
I want to know the best way to protect it before I set it up for the internet.
Yeah, we were just saying that. Well, use the Opera browser, which I don't know what OS the Wii runs on, but it probably comes with some variant of IE. I don't know if you can get to a full, you know, like real computer prompt on it. Just a web browser,
yeah,
and
I don't think
and
you
then
can.
Multi-user games is the big thing.
Yeah.
I don't think there's anything available for it yet. We'll research that, but I don't have an answer for you.
Right.
Our next caller is Patty from Webster, New York. Welcome, Patty. What's your question?
Oh, you were talking to a gentleman before there about three people ago about changing the email over.
Right.
Dave was saying to Thunderbird.
Yes.
Now, my question is, because I don't know a lot about computers, if it wasn't for Dave Enright helping me out, and when I call there, his secretary, the lady that answers the phone, is like a genius.
Thank you.
They're like my...
That's Samantha.
Samantha's just amazing, you know?
She's a great girl.
Oh, yeah, you can call and ask a question, and she's just wonderful. My question is, now, if I go over to Thunderbird, what about the name that Roadrunner's given me?
That doesn't change. None of that has any effect on anything else. What happens is that is set by Thunderbird, by Roadrunner. So when you start up Thunderbird, you have to tell it what that name is. It doesn't change. However, Thunderbird will pick up that name from your Outlook Express.
When you install the program.
Right. When you install it, one of the things it says, oh, you're running Outlook. Do you want to transfer all those things over to me?
And you say yes.
And it does it automatically.
And you just use Thunderbird from there on.
And magic will have happened. It's just magic. We have about 30 seconds. Scott from Rochester on Linux. Go.
Yes. I downloaded Ubuntu and installed it last night. I ran into a dual boot situation. How do I disable Windows XP?
How do you disable it?
So it doesn't boot up on XP and it's up with Linux, Ubuntu.
Well, it depends on how you set it up. If you had Windows installed first and Linux was installed second, it should default to Linux. If not, somebody's got to sit down at that machine to figure out what exactly it did.
Which boot
about
manager
a million,
you use.
Right. I apologize, I can't answer that over the phone. I wish I could, but without knowing which boot manager and how you set it up and looking at the screens, I can't tell. We're done for another week. I want to thank Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton. I'm Nick Francesco. Thanks to everybody who called in. I apologize to everyone to whom we did not get. Please vote in the poll. Please check out AskNick.com.
That's AskNick.com.
Oh, he's good. And we will be back here next week. You're welcome for the forums. To everybody who didn't thank me after having yelled at me, oh, don't have time. We're our sound bites. Rock.